Good morning, welcome along to Tip Today on this rather cool Monday morning. Coming up on the show, we'll be talking about solitary confinement in prison and plans to ban it. We'll also be talking about a fascinating new exhibition which has been digitalised and chronicles Tipperary through the ages. We'll also have our Cuckoo Slant with Paddy Fahey. I took my dog Jumper to the vet, and that was rather interesting, and we'll bring you that recording too. We'll also be talking to a man about the repercussions of having a gun pointed at you in light of calls for homeowners to arm themselves. It's a very interesting piece indeed. Alison is by the phone to take your calls. She is producing today. 1800 938 007. That's a free phone number if you want to speak to Ali, or you can text me on 083 311 3311. Let's have a quick look at what's making headlines today. A major upgrade has been approved for Clonmel Garda Station. Conditions at the building on Emmett Street in Clonmel are far from ideal, and OPW Minister Kevin Boxer-Moran recently met with representatives from the GRA to discuss a short-term solution to the problems there. A new station is to be built on part of the Kickham Barracks site in the town. Met Éireann has issued two weather warnings, with snowfall expected to hit Tipperary this evening. A snow ice warning comes into effect from 6 o'clock until tomorrow morning. As well as the Premier County, it will also affect all of Leinster, as well as Cavan, Monaghan, Donegal, Leitrim, Roscommon, Sligo and Waterford as well. Temperatures are also set to plummet as low as -5 degrees in part of the country. All party talks will get underway later in the latest attempt to try to set up a power-sharing government and agreement. Indeed, in the North, politicians have been holding discussions since last month, and they attempt to get past that long-running impasse there. Well, to sport, first of all, and I suppose a big talking point this weekend in sport is that amazing drop goal by Johnny Sexton to secure a great win for Ireland in Paris in their opening Six Nations game. To talk to me about that, I'm joined on the line now by our own Ronan Quirk. Good morning to you, Ronan.
Morning, Fran. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Before we go to the rugby, though, Ronan, a mixed bag this weekend for Tipperary hurlers and footballs. A win, of course, against Waterford on Saturday. Upping the game, I suppose, in
fairness?
Yeah,
very much. In the second half, we went through the gears, and I thought that was important. Yeah. It was a somewhat lackluster, you know, first half that was played largely in first gear. Both sides guilty of some awful wides, some really, really poor shooting from both sides. It is obviously early in the season, early in the year. I wouldn't be too perturbed by that, particularly because the game is played under lights and hurling as a sport doesn't lend itself particularly to evening games. Having said that, Tipperary came out in the second half, went through the gears in fairly impressive style. Now, it's very early days in the season. It is only early February. I don't think you'd be drawing any conclusions from it whatsoever, apart from the very, very impressive debut performance from young Paul Crean from Kilnall, who I thought put in a good shift of work and showed what he's about, and I suppose announced himself for those who hadn't seen him before. Those of us who watch a bit of South Hurling would be well familiar with him, but I just thought he was very impressive. And on a night where there was some positives but no great drama, I thought he was the most impressive positive.
And by comparison to the game with Clare, Ronan?
Yeah, because in the game against Clare, we didn't go through any gears.
Yeah.
So there was a bit more honesty of effort in the second half, and there was a bit more application from the Tipperary side. Now, they have a week off next week, which I think Mick Ryan will be absolutely delighted with, just to, you know, recuperate, especially with some tired bodies in this cold and wet weather that we're having. So I think he'll appreciate that, get a bit more conditioning into the players before ahead of the next game, which is against Wexford in Semple Stadium on Saturday week.
Interesting. I think, was Noel McGrath man of the match?
He was man of the match. And had a very impressive performance as well. Brendan Maher was back. He hit a couple of bad wides, but then second half stuck over some nice points, some excellent sideline cuts, one from Noel McGrath, one from Ronan Maher. They're always worth the admission alone. Michael Breen, I think, put in a good job of work. Still some questions about our inside forward line, but, you know, as I keep repeating myself,
it's early days.
And yeah, nothing we saw on Saturday night will have any bearing on what we're going to see in June.
Disappointing loss for the footballers against Roscommon, Ronan. Narrow defeat there, having led by 6 points for much of that game. What should we take from that?
Well, okay, there's two things that strike me about this. Roscommon are the Connacht champions. Roscommon beat Mayo. Well, they won the Connacht Championship and took Mayo to a replay last year. And Roscommon were a Division 1 team last year.
Yeah.
So in 12 months previous, Roscommon were playing at a much higher level than Tipperary. But that doesn't give me any gratification that Tipperary ran them close. That was a game that Tipperary absolutely left behind them. And we just need to get smarter. We showed a degree of naivety. Some changes on the line absolutely didn't work. Some changes, positional changes, that should have been made on the field, or should not have been made, actually, on the field, more accurately, just didn't work. And this is where we're at with Tipperary football. We're at a stage where we're at the cusp of dining at the top table, and we just need to get a lot more street smart, because that was 2 points that we left behind us. There was no glorious defeat yesterday. That was an absolute mess in the last 5 minutes of that match, and we blew it, and we shouldn't have blown it, and the reason we blew it was because we were naive. That might sound harsh, but you know what? I suppose from a footballing point of view, there's a huge amount of positives there. You just come away with a little nasty taste in your mouth because we left 2 points behind us. But it was superb performance. Scored 3-9 yesterday. Very, very impressive performance from the Tipperary team. But absolutely, absolutely a bit of a kick in the gut, to be blunt, because we left those 2 points behind us. Shouldn't have done it. Naive.
Of course,
can't make that mistake again.
All right. Of course, the main sporting talking point over the weekend, Ronan, Ireland's Six Nations opener against France in Paris. And I want to give people a reminder just of that goal. Have a listen.
To the point at which a drop goal becomes possible. Sexton waits. Here it comes. It looks good. He likes it. Nigel Owen's arm goes up. And Ireland and the players tear back into their own 22, and Guillaume Girardot, look at that face.
We're already talking about this, Ronan, as one of the iconic moments of Irish sport. Is it that?
Yeah, it's premature, I'm afraid to say that, because there was no medals given out in Paris on Saturday night. There was no trophy handed over. This is the first game of a campaign, and we didn't blow it. And that's ultimately the taking point for this. It was right out of the Munster playbook. 40 phases on a wet pitch and a wet ball. It takes an awful lot of patience and an awful lot of professionalism to go through 40 phases and keep your composure and keep your patience and wait and wait and wait for the opportunity. And it's, you know, that is very, very difficult to do. Munster were very good at doing that, putting O'Gara back in the pocket, dropping the ball back to him and getting him to drop the ball. But from 45 metres under that pressure, it wasn't the best position. It wasn't an A-plus position that he was in. Very, very difficult thing to execute. Huge amount of bravery to do it. Huge amount of responsibility, leadership. Give me the ball, I will do this. That's very, you know, Sexton was always one of the top out-halves in the world, but he really showed how good he was to do that on Saturday night. An extraordinary brave thing to do. But Ireland almost blew that match as well. Ireland were comfortable in that game. We were by far the better side. Didn't put the game away. Allowed France into it. Gave away a terrible try. Teddy Thomas ran through 4 or 5 tackles. Went over for a try. Put France in a point ahead. Then they had a penalty to put them 4 points ahead, which would have required Ireland to go and score a try. They missed that penalty, which gave us the opportunity to get back up the field, drop a goal, and win it from there. Pure drama. I mean, live sport sometimes gets you out of your seat. That got you out of your seat. But again, it doesn't count for a lot, because we were the 5-2 on favourites to win in Paris. Now, our record in Paris over my lifetime is terrible. So I'm never confident when we go to Paris, because I've seen us getting too much of a hiding there over many years. Having said that, we were the 5-2 on favourites. We were such short price. We shouldn't have been in a position where we needed an 82nd minute drop goal to win that match. We should have been comfortable. We should have been coasting. We should have been really in the box seat. But again, sport sometimes gets you out of your seat, gets you to the edge of your seat and then out of it. And what Sexton did was just, I can't describe how difficult a thing that is to execute. You have a split second. There is no room for error, because the game is over once the ball leaves your foot. Once that ball left his foot, the game is going to be over, and it made it by inches. And sometimes sport is a game of inches, and it was on Saturday night.
Fantastic. Rory Best, I know, also commented briefly on Saturday about his appearance at the rape trial in Belfast, Ronan. He said that he felt it was important to hear both sides. A lot of criticism of his appearance there, as you know. Obviously, we can't say much because of the legal proceedings continuing on, but his answer, will that quell this debacle, do you think, or is there more to come?
I think it will. I think he had to say something, you know. Mm. He had to give a reason why he was there. He is going to be a character witness in the trial, yeah. And I think he felt that if he's going to be a character witness, he has to listen to both sides of the argument. Everyone's innocent until proven guilty. It just, the optics of it looked terrible, yeah. The, yeah. You know. But he is the Irish rugby captain. And he's in a very difficult position because a teammate for whom he rightly or wrongly, is going to be a character witness for, is accused of a horrendous crime. And look, we'll wait and see how that one pans out. I think he had to say something. And it was, I thought he was clever that he left it till after the match,
yeah.
Post-match press conference, didn't deflect in the pre-match build-up. I'd say what he has said will essentially take away the tabloid headlines on it, but there was an issue there of how that looked and the optics looked terrible. He was ill-advised.
Ronan, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Ronan.
That's the great Ronan Quirk there. And of course, Ronan is back with you this evening with an in-depth look at all of those sporting occasions on Extra Time, just following the 7 o'clock news this evening here on Tip FM. All right, we're going to take a break and we'll be back in a few moments with a very interesting interview with a gentleman who had a gun pulled on him. His story is next.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
In light of calls to homeowners to arm themselves to protect their homes and their families from intruders, Jack spoke to me recently about his experience when a gun was pulled on him. He is conscious that innocent people can get caught up in incidents and the repercussions can affect your entire life. Good morning to you, Jack, and thanks very much indeed for talking to me. A gun was pulled on you. Before that happened, you were an ordinary guy. You were doing well. You were in good mental health, weren't you?
I was, yeah.
A gun was... Now, it's a long story, and some of it we can't actually talk about, but a gun was pulled on you very, very suddenly in a very serious situation. Tell me about the effect that had on you.
It was really stressed out. Serious pains in my head. It was a very stressful situation because the person that done it was a close friend. And it came out of nowhere.
So a few words were had and he said something and you said something. You were kind of messing around. But then, and it was a rifle, was it?
That's correct, yeah.
It was a rifle that was pulled.
It was a rifle. Like, we were two friends, we were messing, joking away. And he told me a joke and I left away and I told him a joke and he flipped on the joke. So he decided to load his rifle, put the gun to my head.
And at that point, did you think he was going to pull the trigger?
I didn't know what was going to happen. I just froze. It was very time stopped situation. Like, there was other friends in the room, and to look at their faces, they thought this was it. Like,
they couldn't believe this was happening.
No, they could not believe, because we were all one team, working together, friends. We were all joking, and just the wrong word, I suppose, just triggered the person. Like,
but that moment in time, now, thankfully, he didn't pull the trigger.
Yeah.
But it certainly changed your life completely and dramatically, didn't it?
My sleep went to hell. I was waking up in cold sweats, nightmares. There was nightmares of going down a road, really narrow. Even trusting people completely went out the window. Walking with people became harder. I lost my job over it.
You sought some help, some counselling help. Now, you said counselling wasn't particularly for you, was it?
I didn't find it helpful to a degree because it was a different situation. You see, we in this country, we don't hear too many in relation to gun violations compared to other countries.
Yeah.
So it was at the time to something really new for councillors to deal with. That's what I maintain. I could be wrong in that, but it was hard to explain it to councillors what I was going through.
Now, it sounds to me like it was post-traumatic stress of some sort.
That's what it was diagnosed.
Was that the diagnosis in the end?
I've been to psychiatrists in relation to, and that's what they diagnosed as.
Have you been on medication for?
I have been on Prozac and Stilnoc.
Right, for a long time.
I'm still on it. Right. This happened.
Tell me about the other option with the psychiatrist, because they were advocating something called flooding. Is that right?
That's correct.
Would you explain flooding?
It's a reenactment of what happened.
Of the trauma. Yeah.
That's correct. And there's a good chance of it not working. And there's a chance that my condition would get worse.
But it may get better.
There's very little chance of it.
Very little chance of that. But it's a reenactment of exactly what happened. But I would imagine that the trauma of that would be colossal. So
I dreaded it.
So you said no?
No.
I dreaded it. Right. And is that a recognised way of treating trauma?
I'm not too sure. See, it was coming from the psychiatrist side of things. It was a way of dealing with it, but I'm not too sure of that.
Would you describe your general demeanour then as like, are you depressed a lot of the time?
It never goes away. Like, the person was there, loaded a weapon, held it towards my head, and I didn't know whether I was going to live or die. That's a common fact of it. And to make things worse then, and this is the he stopped. He took out the magazine. He cocked the rifle. And he went to reload with the round that came out of the breech independently. Now,
and you were waiting there.
But this is something like that. Where was he going to go from there, like? Where was it going to finish?
And did you think he was going to kill you at that point?
But who else was he going to kill, like, as well after that? Like?
In your head, do you see that happening after all these years? Do you still...
The whole thing never goes away anyway, because...
So you're in fear as well,
It's the trust, trying to trust other people. You're working with other people, and you have to try and trust them. And if it's a case that you're working in a place... it's like if they even bring in the law, they allow guns into the people's houses. Like, if I work for that particular person that has a gun in the house, I have to trust him. And that is a very worrying effect for me.
So, because it's all being discussed now, what do you say to that then? Do you think...
I'm opposed.
You're opposed to it completely. So going down the road of arming people, even if it's for their own protection, you think...
It's madness. There's only one legislation really has to change in this country in order to deal with those people that are doing
right.
What they're doing.
This is the criminal element who right. But the way not to do it is to give more gun licenses and.
Well, like from what I've went through, I wouldn't like anyone to go through it. Because right. It's the most...
Because an innocent person can get involved in this, of course. Yeah,
that's the problem. Yeah. My whole life was turned upside down. I'm trying to rebuild it. I involved in a discussion group. I'd say only for them, I wouldn't be here. Mm. I wouldn't be talking to you.
what do you mean by that?
What I mean is I wouldn't be outgoing. I wouldn't be able to communicate with people. But they have been so brilliant back along. I can go to them and socialise and believe that I'm in a safe environment, and that's all that matters.
What about looking to the future? Is there any new treatment you're looking to, or are you just trying to deal with this as best you can yourself?
I'm trying to deal with it as best I can. It's not perfect, but I'm on the radio here today to try and warn people of what it's like and the way life can be turned upside down because of something that you can't control.
All right, Jack, it was great to talk to you today, and thanks very much indeed. We wish you well. Thank you.
Thank you
for that. And that's Jack's story, and that's his contribution, I suppose, to the debate that we were having for most of last week about the notion that people should arm themselves to, to look after themselves and their property. But that's just another look at that. And I suppose when somebody does pull a gun on you, particularly if you're an innocent person, you might be going in looking for directions or to use a phone or whatever, it can have a severe traumatic effect. So it's worth keeping that in mind. 1800 938 007. We come back, we'll be talking about the proposed abolition of solitary confinement in our prisons.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
A new report has made 25 recommendations aiming to abolish solitary confinement here in Ireland in our prisons. A significant number of Irish prisoners are locked up for 19 hours or more per day. Most of them have asked to be there for protection, but it severely restricts their access to services and could be, according to the report, damaging to their mental and physical health. Joining me now to talk to us about this is Joe Leahy. Joe, of course, former councillor and Garda, and a very regular contributor to the show. But also, Joe, you've been part of a prison visiting committee for many years now.
Yeah, that's
right?
That's right. Good morning, Fran. There's a prison visiting committee appointed by the government in every prison in the country. And they are for the purpose of, I suppose, scrutinising what goes on from the outside looking in, we'll say, in relation to prisoners, in relation to and every other aspect of the prison life.
All right. And do you make recommendations?
We do, yeah. We issue an annual report every year about the different aspects of it, the different things we see. And we meet all the different agencies that are working within the prison. You know, for example, there's I'm based like in the Midlands, which is part of the Portlaoise complex. And we have 830 prisoners there. And I need to, you know, I have to be a bit sensitive, careful in the sense that you're going to have listeners whose relatives are probably in there as well and all that. So I just need to be a bit sensitive to that. But there's three chaplains there. There's psychiatrists, there's social workers, there's, you know, there's doctors, there's nurses. Every aspect of life is working within that prison.
Is that the prison now where currently there's 50 inmates in solitary? Is that the one? What is the makeup of that 50 people, Joe? I mean, are they forced to be there?
No, there's what they call, there's two different regimes, I suppose, within the prison. How prison life starts when you go into prison, you can be on basic rule, standard rule, or you can get to enhanced. To achieve enhanced, you need to work your way up, as in attend a number of classes every week, attend a number of workshops every week, or do some amount of work like in the kitchen or in the garden or whatever else. And if you can prove yourself to the authorities that you will do that, then you'll get up to enhanced. And as a result, then you'll probably end up with your own cell and less strict regime because you're a trusted prisoner. Now, you're still in prison, don't get me wrong, but you'd have freedom, you'd have a bit more freedom within the confines of the prison. Back to the term that they use for the solitary confinement within the prison system is called segregation. And a lot of those, out of 830, we'd probably have 50 that are in solitary confinement or segregation at the moment as we speak. The vast majority of those are there by their own wish. They want to be in solitary.
They ask.
Now, there are several reasons confined. Why they ask. One of the, you know, you can take prisoner A and prisoner B. When they're out in the outside world, guy A might owe guy B money for drugs, and guy A and B end up in the same prison. So one of the two of them then says, I'll be taken out if I'm not moved somewhere else.
So it's for my own protection I want to.
Absolutely. It's for my own protection that I want to go into that. Right. And a lot of them do that. A lot of these, they can't. A lot of them, there's about seven groups, different groups inside within the prison. And you have your exercise time and you have all this kind of exercise. As a day like today, you can go out into the exercise yard, some play a bit of soccer, a bit of football, others just sit down and they chat and they talk. But when you have other groups then that can't go out while they're out, that changes all the dynamic of the time frame of people allowed to be, that are allowed out. But even, and I will say this, even all these people in segregation, they all get exercise time.
Mm.
And they get time out in the yard. Exercise time is the term that they use.
And the Irish Penal Reform Trust, they're the people, they're an NGO group. They're the people who came up with this report, Joe, and they're saying that nearly 400 prisoners now, that's in total, being locked up for nearly 19 hours a day. Would that be accurate?
I wouldn't say it is accurate, no. I wouldn't say it is quite accurate. Because, like, during those length of times, like, each individual, they can go to see the doctor, they can go to the chiropractor, they can go to a workshop, they can do whatever they want to do, if they want to do it. But one thing that we can't ever forget here, we can't forget here, that these are prisoners. Like, you're not talking about a five-star hotel here. Yeah. You're talking about prisoners. And to become, in Ireland, we have a I don't know, is it a, how you describe the system, but we have a funny system in the sense that you've probably got 15 or 20 or 30 or 40 hits before you, or cautions or warnings, before you get to there. Now, you'll always get the one that's straight in for murder. But the system that we have here with juveniles and juvenile liaisons and all that kind of stuff is we have so many warnings given out to all these people before they end up there. So they end up there of their own choice at the end of the day.
What is solitary confinement like? You know, is it particularly austere? What?
No, well, you're inside in your own cell for whatever number of hours that you wish to be inside in your own cell. Your own cell is probably, it's about, I suppose, it wouldn't be as big, your room wouldn't be as big as the studio that we have here. It would be probably maybe 12 feet by 12 feet, maybe that. Mm-hmm. And you're inside that. Now you can have your radio, you can have your television, you kind of whatever it is.
But isn't there a better option then than sharing with somebody?
It is, and that's and that brings us on to another point, I suppose, Fran. In the Irish prison authorities, their duty is to run the prison, and they have to take care of everybody within the system, whether we like it or we don't like it. You know, and there's one line of thought: if somebody killed your brother, you know, you want them locked up forever. But the other side line of thought then is, well, if your son is inside in prison, well, you want them looked after. You know, you have to look at this from two different mindsets altogether. And on top of that then, I suppose, you have to also look at it and say, each prisoner then is entitled to the full protection within the prison, each of them.
No matter what they've done. Right.
Now, and some inmates will take fair quick retribution on a guy that comes in after doing some horrific crime. They won't be long sorting that individual out. And they will do it. So, but the authorities have to look after each individual. That is their function. That is what they're there for. And when you go in then to a two-person cell, you know, you can have a person inside, you can have a man inside, say, of 75 years of age. And they're bunk beds. But on the top bunk then, another 75-year-old can't get up that bunk, so he can't go up there. Now, you can't put a 22-year-old in there because he'd be blaring with his Xbox or something while the guy downstairs is listening to something else altogether. Or the younger guy will rob everything belonging to the other guy. You also have people inside, you know, that are in for rape and male rape and all that type of thing. And if you have those inside, you can't put them into a cell with anybody else either. So it is all well and good in an ideal world saying we need this and we need that and we need the other. But we are where we are, and they are prisoners.
And how true is that notion that really who runs the prison really are the inmates themselves? Is there an element of truth to that?
There will be an element of truth in some of the prisons, but not particularly now, not particularly. They try to control. The criminal, I suppose, by their own mindset, is a guy that wants to go out there and wants to do what he likes, really, and when he likes it. And that's really what, in the mindset of a criminal, they can rob and steal and whatever you have, I can take it. And, you know, a lot of that is the mindset. They see nothing wrong with anything like that. That's the way they live. And they carry that on inside in the prison. And when they bring it inside in the prison, there's a lot of, I suppose, bullying. You know, I'm in charge and you do what I say and, you know, that kind of thing. There's that environment. But in the main, you will have to say that there's an awful lot of them. They go on in. They've done the crime, they do the time, they go in through it and they come out the other side. A lot of them improved themselves, like years ago in another job. I knew one guy that was in for fraud and he became trained to be a solicitor while he was in there. You know, he never put a dot out of
line. There's so many things I could say on that, but I'll refrain.
Absolutely. I can't imagine what they would be. But the truth of the matter is, you can go one route or another inside.
Yes.
you know, you can. I've seen people inside there, and they're training to be a barber, and they're training to do, you know, a pile of different things. They do a lot of them are in horticulture, a lot of them, the City and Guilds program is inside there, and they can achieve different things.
Mm. And what do you make of, I'm trying to put you in the hot seat here, what do you make of a group like the Irish Penal Reform Trust? I mean, they're talking about, you know, being progressive and improving the lot of Irish prisoners and the prison system. What do you make of that?
It would be
because you can look at it from the Garda's point of view, yeah. Where you're putting guys.
You see,
in
an ideal world, it's grand. You know, if you sat down here with a greenfield site, now don't ask me the size of it, but if you sat down with a greenfield site and said, "We'll have this for this," you know, we'll build this purpose built, you know, blah. But look at the cost of that. Like, that's impractical. Like, it's not practical to do these things. Like, it's not like. I know that the survey is carried on within the prisons, and a lot of these people that are in segregation, they fill up a form maybe every 2 or 3 months. Do you want to be here? Do you want to move back out into the main population? And they say, no, they don't. They want to stay where they are. So, like, some of this is, it's idealistic, it's fanciful, but you can imagine, like, if somebody killed my brother, I wouldn't like to see him inside with any better than they have already, and that's for sure. Like, it is punishment. Prison is a punishment for a wrong that you've done to society.
Right. And it should be austere, then.
Well, it certainly should be a prison. Like, yes, a lot of your rights are taken away, and don't get me wrong, you'll have all different groups coming out and saying it's soft and it's this. You are in prison. You can't leave.
Mm.
You can't get out. You are there. That's the end of it. You know, and you're not allowed out until your time is up, and you have visiting rights, you know what I mean? You have all these things, as do the prisoners in segregation. They have 3 visits a week if they want it, you know, and that is what they have. But austere, I suppose, they've done an awful lot of wrong. You know, like a lot of these people that are in this, you know, are in the segregation programme, they're going to be in that anyway, like, and they were in that outside. They're feared outside, and when they go in, they're feared inside. You know, and they have to be put in, some of them, you know.
It's incredible. What happens where the sex offenders are concerned? Are there particular prisons for them?
No, there's we have, in the Midlands, we have a lot of sex offenders in there. But sex offenders, for some reason or other, they don't tend to be volatile inside. They tend to get in and get on with it, you know. And they really do. They tend to kind of put their head down.
But presumably they couldn't mix with the usual population.
No, they don't mix with the usual population. They don't. And that is, and again, when you have a prison, like, and you have all these different makeups within it, and they all need an amount of time, exercise and all that. Now, when you put in the whole scenario together, you also have prison officers bringing remand prisoners to courts all over the country from the place. The manpower that this takes up, you know, it is crazy to see the amount of, I suppose, manpower that is required to run this system. And I suppose, to get back to the question that you asked me, I suppose, within the system itself, it does take a lot of management. To run it, you have to bear in mind that if we're 2 prisoners and if I assault you, you'll claim.
Mm.
You know, so they have to manage all that and mind all those prisoners while they're in there. That's their function, that's their job.
Go back on that for a second for me now. If 2 prisoners have a row,
yes,
and one of them is hurt, they can claim.
They can claim off the state that they weren't looked after properly. Yeah.
Do you not find something bizarre about that?
Well, it is, but it's the rules and the law. It's the law of the land. It's what we have.
Right.
It is what it is.
Because it's a duty of the prison officers to protect the prisoner.
To protect the prisoner. And to protect the prisoner and the dignity of the prisoner and all that. Now, some guys will complain and some guys will say, well, you know, like, I know for a guy recently that he got an unmerciful beating. He was within a few seconds of his life. And only for the hospital was located where it was, in Port Laois, he wouldn't be around today. And it was a prison officer that had to bring him into the van, get him over. They couldn't wait for the ambulance, get him across, and he was saved. And his life was saved. And I know there'll be a lot of different opinions about this, but his life was saved. And the guards, when they came in to investigate it, they went to him and they said, "Can you make a statement about that? Who did it?" He said, "No. I don't know who did it."
It's incredible, isn't it? It's a whole world of its own.
And I suppose yesterday in the Irish Mail, you know, there was a report there by Anne Sheridan, and she said that it's costing $1,000 a day to jail for juveniles, which is 4 times the cost of the maximum security prison. Now, they're juveniles, Now, if you do a case...
That's €1,000 each per
€1,000 each per day.
That's what it's costing.
That's what it's costing. Now, if you do a case study on those, you will see that they will end up being in segregation later on in their lives. And they will. That is, it's proven case. That's what they will do.
So it doesn't work.
It doesn't. I don't think it works. Like when you hear a guy, when you see a guy, I don't think the system is working for the benefit of society the way it is. I honestly believe we need to get in a lot younger. I think when you see they're becoming young people that are involved in crime are becoming professional criminals at 16 and 17 years of age, and they're still juveniles and they're still being getting warnings and cautions. That's the system. I'm not blaming any individual. That's the system, and I think that's wrong. Right. I think that's leading to an awful lot of problems.
And if the jail system was more tough, would that prevent it more? I mean, if there were real fear about going to prison, would that?
Yeah, I think it would be an element. I think it would be an element, but I think that there's too many cautions being given out at a younger age. I think that we need to start to two strikes and you're out. You know, like I think that needs to be done, because one of the problems that we're having as well, that's having Irish life is having in Ireland, is that the majority of these people, when they come out, they're going back to the exact same environment and group of friends and habits as they had when they went back in. You know, and there's no change, back to the same story again, you know.
That's incredible. So as far as the Irish Penal Reform Trust is concerned, then, do you believe that the abolition of the practice of solitary confinement, do you believe that should happen?
No, I don't believe it should happen. And I equally don't believe it can happen. I think, yes, you can tinker around the edges of it all right a bit, and you can do a bit of less of this and less of that. But in reality, I don't think it can happen. Like, you're dealing with a prisoner population who are a population of prisoners, and you're dealing with a prison. And you're dealing with the people that are in there because they were sent in there by the justice system, which we have, because they were found guilty of the crimes that they committed, and they're there. And surely to God, they have to pay the price for that.
So lots of stuff coming in, as you can imagine. The usual, comments about prison isn't a holiday camp and it shouldn't be a holiday camp. One person wants to ask you, Joe, when did 3 visits a week start to be the norm, as it was only a case of 1 visit a week, unless you were on remand or something like that?
No, you can't. You're entitled to, each prisoner is entitled to 3 visits, but they're entitled by law to 3 visits. But whether that is functional or practical, and a lot of people don't require it, they don't look for it, they don't get it, but that is what they look for, so that is what's available if it's required or requested or in different circumstances. It is 3 visits per week.
All right. Listen, really good to talk to you, Joe. And thanks for coming in to us today. 1800 938 007. We'll be hearing from one of our listeners about match day traffic in Thurles after these.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
It was a busy weekend in Thurles with both the hurlers and the footballers in action in Semple Stadium. And again, we've heard that there were huge problems with match day traffic and parking. John joins me in line. Good morning to you, John.
Morning, friend.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. You live fairly close to the stadium. How bad was the situation this weekend, John?
Well, the situation Saturday night was a very bad friend, because the cars just come up and parked and dumped their cars everywhere. And no one could get up or down. No one could go up or down Kennedy Park. No one could get over Collins Park. They had a barrier out on the front road up towards the stadium, which the barrier should have been at the end of Kennedy Park. One steward on it. And there's one man down Kennedy Park, he went out to go to the shop to get messages, and he came back and there was a fella backed into his front.
Backed into the front of his house?
Backed into the front of his house, and he came back and he said, "What are you doing there?" And he said, "I'm turning my car."
But of course he wasn't. If he could get away with it, he would have stayed.
Yeah. But it's gone so bad. Now, with the fire brigade lads came up in a jeep there, and they looked around and they said, "It was scandalous."
And what does that mean, John, that in the event of an emergency, is it?
In the event of an emergency or anything, like an ambulance couldn't get up, a fire brigade couldn't get up, nothing could get up or down. Now, the mass was in Bournemouth as well, and there was a funeral coming to Bournemouth.
That's right, yeah.
And wasn't the bollard on the road. Now, there was a vanguard going around on a bicycle, and she might as well have been sitting at home, because If she had to have a bunch of tickets in her pocket to put them on the cars, might solve the problem.
I was going to ask you about the Gardaí and their role in this, because when they do take a full and active part in this, it makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
It makes an awful difference, yes. Like, we'd have no problem now that they have a Munster semi-final or Munster final because the cars wouldn't be allowed up.
Yeah.
Now, it's only the GAA on Saturday night, it must have took in over £100,000 over there in the stadium. And all it had to do was pay 3 yards. There's 3 areas that needs to be solved. The one is in the Kennedy Park. It's 5 minutes walk to the stadium from there. The other is below on the bridge there, going up to Bournemouth. And the other one is at the dog track. And they 3 barriers across those places and guards on them. There's no traffic be allowed down there. Everyone living in this area has a residence pass on their car. So right. It's easy to know who's living in the area and who's not living there.
Right, so if it was policed, it would be easy enough to do it.
If it was done right, or even if the steward that was out on the road on Saturday night here, now there was one person came up the road, they were only 20 yards from their driveway, and he wouldn't dam up.
Right.
Now, if that steward had to be at the end of Kennedy Park and had to look at the windscreens of the car and see who had passes and who hadn't passes, they wouldn't be allowed up there.
But, John, how was he able to stop somebody who had a residence pass on their car?
Well, he stopped him. He wouldn't let him up the driver.
But surely he doesn't have the power to do that.
But he doesn't. But the guard is not doing it because they're not getting paid to do it, you see. So he's taking it on his own hands.
Have you been part of any meeting with the GAA to sort this out?
There's no point because there's supposed to be a residence association here, yeah. But they're only interested in Childers Park. They're not interested in Kennedy Park or Collins Park.
Right, and is it time for you to get together with a separate grouping then?
What I'd like to see people going on the radio there today and talking about the situation there Saturday night, because I counted, after the match, 200 cars coming down from the stadium. Now, all them cars were going down Kennedy Park. People had to leave their cars below at Lidl to walk home until 10:15 to bring up their cars up the road.
Right, these are the residents of the area.
Residents in the area, yeah. They had to leave their cars. They're coming up to town with messages and stuff, and they had to leave their cars at Lidl and walk up. And they had to go down then at 10:15 and bring up their car when all the cars were gone.
And, I mean, is this what you have to expect now over the coming months?
This is the same now, Fran. I was on to you last year about this. Yeah. This is the very start. This Saturday night was the start of it.
Right, but
Saturday night will start, but no, we are going to have to cope with that now for the rest of the year, even with club matches.
And what about, isn't there a car park in that vicinity that can be opened?
There's only a residence car park in our area, but there's a car park there at the end of Morris Park on the Holy Cross Road.
Yeah.
Durlis Oak have a car park there as well.
And was that opened on Saturday night?
I don't know if they were open or not on Saturday night. Sometimes they don't open because the fields are too soft and they're not allowed in the cars.
But even when they are open, you see, people will try and get on the doorstep of Semple Stadium, you know?
Whether they're open or not, friend, the people are going to come up in the cars. They just dump their cars anywhere. I see one fellow in a van and he parked about 5 doors down from me, and he had half of the van out in the road and half of it in on the footpath.
Right. But I mean, whatever about the being hired to police the area, that's breaking the law.
Yeah, well, it is, but there's no one there to enforce it on them. See, like, I can't understand Cork, the match in Cork last weekend was on the radio there on Saturday and Friday.
Yeah.
No parking within a mile of the parking piece. And they run shuttle buses in and out. Now, you wouldn't have to walk a mile to the Simple Stadium. It's only 10 minutes from the end of Holy Cross Road there. And it's only 5 minutes from the other side.
And now, do you think, John, is there plenty of parking other than the area around you? I mean, is there enough parking in outlying areas?
Well, there is, but if you open the car parks, there's enough parking.
Yeah.
Like the GAA, I've no other money. They're doing this, they're doing that. I can't understand why they can't buy the end of Morris Park over there and make a proper car park out with for cars. You put 1,000 cars in there.
And do you think it's their duty to do that?
Yeah, well, if they do that, they'll have their money back in no time. Any matches there, the big match, they'll put 1,000 cars in there.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just ridiculous what's going on. Like, they have to be fair to people, like, you know. No one is coming down on our ranking like that. But all we're saying is, we want to be a pleasure here. We have no problem with a Munster final or a Munster semi-final. No problem whatsoever. anything big is going on there, the guards are there, they're paid for doing their job.
And it's policed properly.
It's policed properly. But the thing is that these night matches, and those matches, that match could have been played during the day, but even if it was played during the day, we still have the same problem.
All right, John. Well, let's see what we get in from people where that is concerned. Anybody out there with opinions on that, please talk to Ali on 1800 938 007. You can text on 083 311 3311.